are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with Lotus. Lotus, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm actually very excited about this topic that we're going to get into today.
Yeah. We're talking with our patrons today about the different concepts that make up traditional Elder Scrolls games. The things that we've seen, let's say, from Arena, but from Daggerfall to Morrowind to Oblivion to Skyrim. A lot of the key concepts.
Battlespire
maybe. But, you know, the key things that make an Elder Scrolls game an Elder Scrolls game and how important each of those things are. And the context of this is we have a new Elder Scrolls game on the horizon. Who knows if, you know, in the next few years we'll be getting Elder Scrolls 6. We don't know exactly when, but we know it's coming. But we also have games like The Wayward Realms, which are calling itself like a spiritual successor to Daggerfall. And so the other piece of this, I guess I could add on to this, is I was looking through a bunch of indie games recently and I was like, you know, there's got to be somebody out there who's doing the Elder Scrolls thing, but maybe on a smaller scale, like an indie studio. And it's actually very, very rare. It's hard to find anybody who's really kind of doing the basic core components in an Elder Scrolls sort of way, as opposed to a more traditional RPG sort of way, like other titles. So I wanted to get us all together and talk about which things are most important to each of us and which things we'd like to see in future games and all of that. So it's me and Lotus, and then we also have Rob and Fulcrum and Spartan and Falcon with a box on. Welcome, everybody. On the count of three, go ahead and unmute and make the sound of an Elder Scroll. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Wait, was that a cat? Elder Scroll like a manatee?
I was
expecting like crinkling paper, but
oh wow, that's amazing. Most of you didn't make
it has
any
like
sound.
A constant humming noise, kind of like a Nurnroot.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
More right. Grizzled Nurnroot.
Yeah. That's great. All right. So welcome back, everybody. Let's just jump right into this. There are a number of different things that make an Elder Scrolls game an Elder Scrolls game. You know, like you've got a huge open world. You have interactability with items and things on shelves and things you can pick up. You can put baskets on people's heads. You can do all that sort of stuff. There are key story elements. There's the idea that you can kind of choose your way through the world and take on different concepts at different times. There's lots of these different characteristics. Let's start with a huge open world. I feel like there's probably not going to be a whole lot of debate about this one, but we're going to go topic to topic and feel free to unmute and kind of chime in. There's only a small group of us, but how important to you is the open world aspect of the game and how freely open that is? Who would like to start? Fulcrum?
I feel like with the way video games in general are going, I think it's becoming more and more important in general to have an open world.
That has been the trend over like the last 15 years, is more and more games have committed to that.
Yeah, and like I've noticed, especially in news, like when a new game comes out, they're like, it's not open world enough. We can't go anywhere, or like it's too restrictive. So like I feel like it's probably like a 7 or 8 for me.
So out of 10, but, so pretty high importance.
Yeah, but I don't think it should be too much. Like, there should be certain limitations, but I don't know how I would.
Well, here, let me refine this for you a little bit. There are some differences in the different Elder Scrolls titles. Like, for example, in some of the titles, the world levels up with you, like in Skyrim or Oblivion. Oblivion kind of started that and Skyrim kind of refined it a little bit so that it wasn't so messed up and you just all of a sudden wolves didn't exist
wildly
anymore.
Wildly unbalanced at one point.
Right. Skyrim kind of balanced that out. The world kind of levels up with you, but that also limits the potential to come across some gigantic monster that you just can't handle early in the game. So it makes it a little bit safer. So it feels less open. It's almost like You can go anywhere, but you can't really do anything yet. You can't try to take on, say, the big dragon at level two and see if you can beat it as a level two character, because it like the worst dragons don't show up.
It yet. Would just destroy you.
Right. Or if you're somebody who enjoys the challenge of, you know, like Elden Ring, beating Elden Ring at level one, you can't really do that with Skyrim because you can't unlock those enemies until you level up.
Yeah. Until you're 81 or whatever it is, you can't get a legendary dragon to spawn or whatever without a mod. I think that's the checkpoint. I don't know. It's been a while since I've
been level one. You don't really need a legendary dragon. Any dragon will be terrifying enough, though, I feel like.
I wouldn't get my achievement without my legendary dragon.
That's true. So do you like the idea of there being like a catered open world, kind of more like Skyrim, or does it appeal to you to have like areas and boundaries on the map where it's like, oh, you can go into that part, but you're not ready for it? So it genuinely makes you feel like you have to get strong enough to go there.
I think I lean more towards that, because like I feel like you should be able to go there and try to experience it, but then get completely wrecked and be like, oh, I'm not ready.
Yeah. Like, for example, Fallout New Vegas, if you just head north on the map from the beginning of the game, you run into like Deathclaw City and they absolutely demolish you because you're not ready to deal with a bunch of Deathclaws yet.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing?
Yeah, I would say so. But not like so unrestrictive that you could like, I don't know. I guess pretty, for the most part, unrestricted.
Okay. Would you still want there to be world leveling with you as you go? Like it's almost like a hybrid of the two?
I think so, yeah. Because like I feel like you should be able to go into those areas and still find things that you can do, but most of the stuff is going to be things that you can't.
Right. Would that also mean that let's say you're able to game the system enough and you get through a really dangerous dungeon and you make your way and you sneak past the boss of the dungeon who would absolutely demolish you unless you're like level 50 plus and you're like level 10. And then you can get into the treasure chest and then you can get like the super crazy Daedric sword of like killing everybody. Do you feel like that's balanced, that maybe you could still get that ahead of time? Or
I think it would be interesting if you could get it ahead of time, but not use it.
Oh, like there's like a level requirement,
like the sword would be like a requirement. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's so many different ways to handle this stuff, and it's all been handled different ways throughout the series and other games. Who else has thoughts on this? Rob, did you have thoughts?
Yeah, I think the reason why open world games are interesting is because they help it feel more real and that you can kind of go anywhere. And so if the whole world is catered to you, that's not helping it feel more real if everything is just, you know, as weak as you are.
And you have to follow a certain...
Yeah. If you go into the wrong area, there should be context clues. It shouldn't just blindside anyone. But if we're going into the wrong area, it should be clear you're going into the wrong area and you should die.
Right.
And if you somehow don't die and you get that super cool sword and the rest of the game is super easy, well, yeah, it was really hard for you to get that sword at that level that you got it. So you better get a huge payoff. And yeah, maybe it makes the game super duper like unchallenging from that point on. But I don't know what else you would expect when you are like breaking past the barriers that the game has kind of laid out for you and allows you to break, but like made it clear that was a barrier all the same.
Right. I think that's a really good point. When some of the developers for New Vegas were interviewed about game balance of weapons, their response was basically like, yeah, no, we didn't balance the weapons in the game. But I think that's part of the flavor of it, is that you can come across a weapon and go, holy crap, I'm demolishing the enemies all of a sudden. This is amazing. And then as you continue throughout the game, eventually you catch
it
up to the...
It starts to get less and less.
Right,
it catches up.
Right.
I was, while Rob was talking, I was kind of thinking, like, because I had only just recently played The Witcher 3 for the first time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the weapons have a level requirement. And it's like, well, what if I want to use it?
Right.
But in my mind, that's, and like the same with the armor. you cannot use it until a certain level. And it's like,
right,
that's kind of really restrictive.
It feels artificial. It feels artificial. You know what would actually feel better? And I mentioned Elden Ring before, and we've got Spartan here, does an Elden Ring lore podcast. So feel free to chime in on this, Spartan. What was that, Rob?
I said he might know a thing or two.
Yeah, he might know a thing or two. But in the FromSoft games, they don't level gate you. They stat gate you. If you don't have enough strength, you can't wield the giant hammer. So it would make sense that you would have to build up your character to be able to be either dexterous enough or strong enough or just coordinated enough and whatever that skill line is to be able to use that weapon. That feels more natural. Like you have to practice before, you know, you got to practice with the wooden swords before you get a freaking katana, you know, like, wouldn't that make sense? Spartan, what do you think? Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. So something with the open world and all that, I think for the open world to have like the areas where you go and it's too difficult and you have to like back out, I think for that to feel like satisfying and fun for me, the combat has to be revamped a little bit. Like, because like in Skyrim, like, or like even Fallout 4, like melee combat, like there's no dodge. There's no, you know, you're swiping side to side. It's very, so it's like, if I were to find something that's so above my, like part of why you can do a soul level one or like a level one run in Elden Ring is because you have so much more freedom of movement,
right,
and like control right over what you do. So like the actual player, like what you're doing as the player and like the like patience or like skill you may have just has more meaning in that sense, because you have more options of what you're doing, where it's like Skyrim, like when I've tried to play like the highest difficulty on Skyrim, it's just, all right, I'm gonna step back so I can't get hit, and then I'm gonna step forward,
you kite and everything then swing. And then,
so like for that to feel like rewarding and fun for me, I would want more of like an ability to bat above my weight class, like as like controlling my character, like because if I could do that more consistently in the combat of the game, then I would love to have areas where it's like, oh, this is too challenged. Like this is, I'm not supposed to be here. Cause like everyone's been saying, maybe you do get some awesome legendary sword that you weren't supposed to get at that point in time. And then, you know, now you go back to the areas you're supposed to be at from a level standpoint and you're wrecking shop. Like that sounds really fun. But I also like, I feel like it'd be really frustrating if I was just trying to do like the Skyrim method of like, oh, just back right, up. Right. Like, I just think that would get a little stale for me.
Yeah, that's a solid point. A lot of modders have added in improvements to the combat system in Skyrim, so you can mod that in. And in the last, I mean, how long has it been now? 14 years since Skyrim came out? 13, 14 years? What's the timeline now? Do you remember?
13. It was 11, 11, 13. 11.
That's right. Yeah.
In the November.
So So in the almost 13 years, there has been a lot of improvement with RPG game mechanics. I mean, think of, speaking about FromSoft, which FromSoft games were out in 2011? Demon's Souls and Dark Souls?
Yeah, I think that was when.
That was it?
Would it be Dark Souls 2, or is that still early for that?
That might have been. That might have been when 2 came out.
Yeah, it was like pretty early in their catalog. No,
yeah, but if none of if these that other wasn't when entries. 2 came out, because I think that might have been when the original version of 2 came out. But if
that's
not,
also
then
like
the only
Stealth Archer is like the ML of like the gameplay style is like, well, it's because all the melee styles are they're fine, but like the limited combat system we have is only so compelling at that point.
Right. Right. Okay. So. We need to move on to other topics, but I think this has been a great discussion so far. So when it comes to huge open world and the world feeling like it rewards you for doing things and it still interacts with you as you progress and it still gives you opportunities to deal with all the creatures and it doesn't level you out of stuff. When it comes to that, how important is that in the next Elder Scrolls game? Like if you were to just give it a number, let's everybody vote on a number, 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest. Rob, what do you think?
10.
That's 10. That's very important.
And then, there's not a single Elder Scrolls game that doesn't have that a style to it in some degree. So if it's not open world, it's not Elder Scrolls.
Yeah. Yeah. So would everybody agree on 10 or does anybody disagree on 10?
I would say, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think I would agree now. I mean, like especially after this discussion, like I know I said like 7 or 8, mm-hmm. but like after the discussion that we just had, I think I would agree with 10.
Yeah, I would. Let's couch it in the version of an open world that makes it fun for you, but it's still a big open world.
Yeah, right? whether or not it's scaling or not scaling, right. It's whatever just the interactable open world, which for me, it's 100% like 10. Like that is the defining feature of Elder Scrolls games to me and why I got hooked on the series to begin with, because I was just like, this is so weird and I can do literally anything I want in this game.
Right.
And since then, I've been just hooked into exploring.
Even Battlespire's open world.
Yeah, it's open something.
To a degree.
It's open something. So Spartan, are you a 10 on that? Falcon, are you a 10? Spartan?
Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing Lotus said, where it's like, that's kind of like, I don't think anybody does that particular thing better than Bethesda. That's kind of like why you play Bethesda games. At least I should say why I play Bethesda games. Like, I was playing Fallout 4 before I jumped on for this, and like, there's a lot of things that you can like or dislike about Fallout 4, but like, same thing with Skyrim, like just exploring that space is so like uniquely fun and like detailed in a way that like, I just don't think other developers like do on the level like I said that's kind of like the thing I think Bethesda is best at, and so it's definitely a 10 for me.
And I think we probably all can agree on it not being like generated, it being actually hand designed.
Yeah, the wilderness generation I could deal with, like, to an extent, like some free wilderness like expansion is like, okay, not everything is handcrafted necessarily, like every tree needs to be exactly the same,
right? But inside the handcraftedness, yeah, like you would have at least have somebody go through and go, okay, 100%. There's a cave here, there's a hidden treasure chest over here, there's like,
right,
like hand put that stuff in, this is where these monsters are.
That absolutely, because otherwise that was one of the big problems I've kind of struggled with Starfield. I'm like, yeah, I get it, they're all the same,
literally gonna say that,
or caves. It's like,
I was literally gonna say the exact same thing. You'd like took the words out of my brain.
And let's have the map designed by humans.
Sure.
Okay, cool. So I think we're all probably on the same side of that. Okay, now let's get into a little bit more nitty-gritty stuff. And all the modern games, I guess since Morrowind, we've had interactable items everywhere. You like one of the things that surprised me the first time I tried Morrowind, and this is like 20 years ago, was you get off the ship, you go inside the building, you get done talking to whoever you're talking to, and then you look on the shelf behind them and it's like, oh, there's a bunch of healing potions. I can just take these? I can just move these things around. Like, that was groundbreaking in like 2002 or whatever it was, right? But how important is that to you now? What do you think about that stuff? Who wants to jump in here? Rob?
Yeah. Now that you say that, I do feel like that is like something that around the time that I started playing more Bethesda games is when I started realizing that was a feature that is available. I didn't really notice that in any other games.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it does feel a bit more unique to like what makes an Elder Scrolls game. But at the same time, I don't think it matters to me in any way. Like, I don't, if it wasn't in the game, I don't think I would have any different opinion on how I felt about the game. But it does feel kind of unique to the series at the same time. So I don't know.
Yeah. Fulcrum, do you agree or disagree?
I feel like I kind of agree. Like, so going from Skyrim, where you could literally interact with every single thing, like you jump on a table and everything goes flying.
Right, right. Right. Other than like the heavy furniture, like chairs, tables, beds, things like that. All the smaller objects are all physics based. Yeah. Right.
Right. And then you go into ESO.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that.
You can't do that. You play Dragon's Dogma 2, which I've played through. And I'm like, I go into a house and I'm like looking around and I know, oh, that one thing over there I can pick up. But nothing in this building is physics interactable. If a fight breaks out and someone tosses a fireball, it doesn't spew things all over the room. Right. And I miss that. Do you feel the same way?
I feel like it's in the middle for me of like, yes, I want to be able to interact with most things, but I don't think that you should be able to interact with everything. Like you were saying earlier, like the beds, the heavy chairs, the giant table, like, you know, all of these things that would be very difficult for us to, like a couch.
Right.
Like, that's going to be difficult for one person to just move around.
Right, you can't just pick it up and put it in your pocket.
Like, yes.
It doesn't work like that.
So, like, in going back to ESO, where you almost can't just take anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to be, it's, like, very specific things.
Right.
And it, like, and you can only really steal very specific things, too. Because, yeah, ESO, like, when it comes to... it's either
lootable or not lootable, but you can't really move stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And so, like, it's 50-50 for me. Like, I think I should be able to jump on the table and everything's going to get messed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, it's more realistic.
Yeah. I love that aspect of if that wasn't in the next Elder Scrolls game, I would be very disappointed because it wouldn't feel right to me. Like, this is one of my tens on the list, even though it doesn't have a huge impact on the gameplay or the story. It's a big piece of making the world feel like a real place.
But then it also drives me crazy when I do that and, like, the freaking bucket just starts.
Right. It glitches out and jitters all over the place. Right. Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know how to put this back.
Right.
Or when you pick anything up and hold it, it just always turns upside down.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. The physics are a little weird. Falcon, did you have thoughts on this too?
Yeah. This is right up there with the world being open. I love physics in games. It's fun. I think the Source Engine, like the Valve games, that's my favorite game engine. I love how those games feel. So I like the interactivity that Skyrim has, that you can move that stuff around, that the stuff is real. It's a actual object you can do something with. It's not just like an art piece, basically.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's super important. Let's rate this one on a scale of 1 to 10. How important is it to each of you? You can hold up fingers if you want to. If you want to just kind of vote, we got a 5. We got a 5 from Rob. What do you think, Fulcrum?
Now I feel like I'm changing my answer again.
Like, so in the middle, time. I feel like it's 10 because it is very unique to Bethesda games, but 0 because I don't really care about it. So I'm going 5 right in the
middle. That's fair. I mean, everyone's going to have their own opinions. Sure.
So I said maybe like a 5 initially, but I think I'm going to go with, I'll bump it up to like a 7, almost 8.
Okay. Yeah. Spartan, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say like an 8 because I feel like it goes pretty hand in hand with like the open world. Like, part of enjoying the open world is how you can interact with it. Mm-hmm. So like, I feel like those things kind of go together, but I also feel like I don't need like an abundance of like, I don't need it to be a game where I can interact with every single thing I find or something like that. Like, I just think that there has to be enough of it to where it doesn't detract from the big open world that they're trying to have.
Right.
Be like, it doesn't, so immersive.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like you're just in an empty box with paintings.
Yeah. Cause I think that's when it gets frustrating, is like when it's like, oh, I have this big open space you want me to play around in, but there's nothing to actually play with.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess for me, going back to what we were saying in the last topic, it's about the game being restrictive. It's kind of the same thing. Like, if you can't interact with everything, then it's restrictive, and I don't want restrictions.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you there. So Falcon, how do you feel about this on just, if you were to just rate it, give it a number?
Yeah, I think it's a 9 or 10. I think it's up there with the open world because it helps the world be open, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense. Lotus, what do you think?
So the only caveat I want to add to it is I love the interactability. It's kind of why I let some of the jankiness slide, because a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, GTA 5 is like even bigger than Skyrim. I'm like, yeah, but I can't go over and just slap somebody's glass out of their hand in GTA 5. It just doesn't work like that.
Right.
Like,
right.
And same thing with like, huge props to all the stuff you can do in The Witcher, but I can't go on a bar top and just dance around kicking crap everywhere. It does not work like that. Right. Bethesda games are kind of, that's their thing.
Right.
I'm less concerned about the physics sometimes so much. Like, they definitely have become more entertaining for like meme value and entertainment, but like that stuff wasn't in Morrowind. But in Morrowind, I stole everybody's pillows and like literally built a three-dimensional fort out of them because I'm a psychopath. Like, so the fact that I could
do that
is still really cool.
Right.
Because it was like, okay, I can literally just interact with all of this literal garbage.
Yeah. You can collect all the cheese and just throw it all in your house. And exactly. Now when you open the door, it pushes the cheese around or whatever.
It became funny differently when they included the Havoc engine. It's like, well, here's a million watermelons and there goes my frame rate. Like different forms of funny with that. But the fact that you can interact with all of the crap in the world is super important to me. And the physics just makes it more entertaining. But even without the physics part of it, that's like up there is like another 10. Like that is part of it's almost one in one with the environment to me.
I agree. This is another absolute need to have. I love when I kill an enemy, they drop their weapons and they scatter on the ground.
Yes.
I love that, you know, like you can pick up your arrows. You miss your shot and you can go pick your arrows back up.
Right. And I know ESO isn't quite as open with it, but in terms of like MMOs, I've even been shown people are like, the interactability with the environment in ESO is like unparalleled compared to other MMOs.
You don't do that in WoW.
You can interact with more things in ESO than you can in World of Warcraft.
Yes.
Right. So it's like, it was kind of, I feel like, the best compromise for that style of game.
You can pet the dog.
And you can always pet the dog and hug the cat and hug the cow, I think, now too. But,
I haven't tried that one.
So like that even in some of the other games, the fact that some of it is interactable, it's always kind of like the more there is, the better it is, and the more Elder Scrollsy it's become for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, well, we've got to take a quick break and go thank our sponsors. So don't go anywhere, but I've got a number of other topics we got to try to get through. So we'll be right back.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
I think I said sponsors. I mean patrons, but our patrons are our sponsors, so I guess it still works. But thank you to all of you for being here. Thank you to everybody in chat currently, including this wonderful spam bot. Welcome, spam bot. I'm going to banish you in just a moment.
I was going to say, I'm just banning spam bot right now.
Bye. But a big shout out to our newest patrons, Sup Dup Sammy, I think is how you pronounce that one. Hunter 21177, Rex Zeon, Nami 681, and Darcelin. Thank you so much for joining us on the Patreon. I hope you're enjoying all of the things that you can get, ad-free episodes and stickers and t-shirts and joining us on the chats like this and a bunch of episodes that are not available for everybody. So go check that out at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. And have to shout out our Daedric Prince's Blinding Vision, Hairscene, Just a Little Bit of Chaos, and Kira C. Thank you so much for your support as well. And for everybody who has supported the show, thank you so very, very, very much.
I think it might be Souped Up Sammy, just FYI.
Souped Up. It looks like
Soup Dupe.
Soup Dupe? Maybe it's Soup Dupe. Yeah.
Like Super Duper?
Super Duper? Maybe. I don't know. Sammy, come let us know how to pronounce your name.
Let us know which of us was even... We're just all wrong.
Maybe we're all wrong. But also, if you want to help us out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read those out on a future episode of the show. You can rate us on Spotify. That helps a ton as well. Or you can just share us with your friends. That's all very helpful. But we have so much more to talk about, so let's get back to the show.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, so while we're on the topic, and I feel like we're kind of hitting on these things that make the world feel more real, or at least more like a place that, like a real place that you can kind of play in, right? This
lived
kind of
in.
Lived in, right? I think one of the things that contributes to that is having characters with real day-night cycles, people who have homes and businesses, and during different times of day, they go from one place to another, or they might travel on the roads. This is another one of those things that was scaled back in Starfield that we don't really see in Starfield, but still exists in the Elder Scrolls games. How important...
Since Arena, right?
Yes, I want to say yes.
Yeah, I was going to say so. They've always kind of been. Well, yeah, if you went to towns at night and stuff like that, there were just less people. Like most people were missing in action. So, yeah,
like
I think
acknowledgement that like people are probably sleeping right now.
Right. And when. Yeah. Right. So, no, you're right.
Only
you're right.
The crazies are out right now.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like
monsters would come out in town. So it was like, oh, they're inside because, you know.
Monsters.
Everything gets weird at night, I guess.
Right. Now, I feel like this peaked in Oblivion because you would even have people with these little side conversations. Like you'd have two people going about their day, right? And they'd pass in the street and one of them would go, oh, tell me again about that thing you mentioned the other day. And then they'll have a little conversation and then they'll move on. And although that was extremely scripted and there were only so many of them, so once you played like 100 hours, you kind of heard them all multiple times. There was something about that that made it feel like, oh, these are actual people in a real space going about their day doing human kinds of things. Skyrim doesn't do that as much. And that was one of the things they kind of scaled back on. So what do you all think? Is this another one of those, like, is it important? How important would it be? Would you want them to do more with it? Or is Skyrim's version enough? Rob, do you want to share on this one?
I was kind of surprised when you said Skyrim doesn't do it enough. I feel like
it does. I guess it does it some. They have cycles, and they do talk to each other. But there's something that's
I know
different.
What you mean. It's,
there's a lot
it's
of
not
dialogue between
as
all of them.
Often as. Like
sure, I think that makes it more natural though. Because
maybe that's
it. Like it was 100% scripted, and so it was like on the same cycle. When you get to that part of the cycle, they have this conversation.
Right,
whereas
right.
In Skyrim, it's like, well, if these two NPCs happen to be near each other while they're walking around the whole town, every once in a while we'll randomly have them have this conversation, and that feels more natural and more realistic. I like
okay, so,
it a lot
so maybe
more.
Maybe my initial impressions of this should be corrected. Maybe that is a better system, and maybe that is something that they've developed in a
but
more
I think
nuanced
the concept
way
as a whole.
Yeah.
Is awesome. I think even just like in the barest of bones scenario in Arena, where we had acknowledgement that there were less people around when it got dark, and even that like it was there were monsters about, and that made it like the world feel fantastical and interesting. That in its barest like form is still really cool, and I think should always be a part of every game. And I'm kind of sad that they don't have the monsters come out at night after. I think Daggerfall was the last one that really embraced that. So it's kind of sad that they don't have like the world gets scarier as it gets darker necessarily, but they still have all of those other like life cycles and you see people kind of going through their day. And I think it got better and better on a personal level, but it was always great. And I think it's an integral part to Elder Scrolls games.
Yeah. And in Skyrim, it's funny because, you know, if you accidentally get chased by wolves into the town, everyone goes, ah, and then they all fight the wolves, or, you know, like a dragon lands and everyone's all of a sudden going to attack the dragon, which was a little bit unrealistic, but it was still responsive, right? It was responsive to the situation rather than just, you know, like they just ignore the dragon. That would be dumb, too, right?
I say the Run for Your Lives mod is just a canon part of the game. So,
yeah, well, it would make sense that like the town guards might try to mount a fight against the monster. But like the guy who's the farmer is like, oh God, and runs away or whatever, right? Like, I'm not equipped to deal with this.
Right.
It would make sense for each of them to act a little bit differently. Fulcrum, what do you think? How important is this to you?
I say it's very important. And I guess, so going back to kind of like what you were saying before about it's a little bit different in Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also a little bit less hilarious.
Okay.
Because a lot of the, it's less realistic in Oblivion than in Skyrim.
Uh-huh.
Because their interactions are to, like, with one another.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, my cat's making biscuits on my leg and it's really hurt.
Oh, no.
But anyway, it's so hilarious.
They have very uncomfortable conversations. Right. Very awkward pacing.
Right. And sometimes the response to the first thing said doesn't really match in a way that you would respond to that in that way. Yeah. Like, it does come across a little awkward.
Besides that, though, I think it's really important to me anyways that it, because the interaction, like the day-night cycle, the conversations, especially, I know they were somewhat limited in Oblivion compared to Skyrim, and even then in Skyrim, they were still pretty limited. But it's really important to have those realistic interactions, because it's going back to the open world, making it feel realistic, like mm-hmm. all of these things.
And I think in Oblivion, it was like, I think he smells bad. Bye now.
Right. All right. Good talking to you. Yeah. Right. Like, okay. Like, weird.
The conversation makes no sense, but okay.
Get out of my face, you elven scum. All right. Nice talking with you. Have a good day. All right. Cool. Yeah, that's kind of how that goes. But it does lend itself to feeling more like a real place. I think that's part of why Skyrim works as a thing that people constantly go back to, is because there's still that feeling of like, oh, no, I can just kind of walk around a place and it feels kind of real. And this is one of the reasons why. Spartan, do you have an opinion on this one? Do you think that this is an important quality, or is this something that really doesn't matter to you?
So I was thinking more of like, because I like what Rob was talking about with the like how in the older games you had like the eat like creatures at night and stuff, like mm-hmm. I think that would be something that, like, I don't care as much about this, like the cycles. I feel like those were mm-hmm. kind of like, I feel like they're fine, like I don't, it doesn't really move the, like do anything here or there, like one way or the other for me. But like, I think it would be really cool if there was like a like bosses, like you know, this seems like something I'm going to pull from a lot, but like Elden Ring, if you were at night, there's bosses that only occur at night. And like, I feel like in Elder Scrolls, you could do really cool stuff like that. Like you could have like a werewolf or something, but like you can only fight this werewolf at, you know, under the right conditions at night.
Or a necromancer summons a bunch of, you know, skeletons on, you know, and they try to like breach the wall of the city. And so the guards all mount a response in the middle of the night to fight back the skeletons,
right, because like there's some crazy necromancer. The town's supposed to be a safe place, but maybe at night it's not as safe as you'd want it to be. It's still safer than out in the wild, but.
Right. They still have to defend themselves, and then people react to it if they happen to be around, you know, and
they're sleeping home. There's Valheim where you have like a bunch of monsters as soon as the sun goes down. Your whatever like fortifications you built up, they get attacked by those dwarf creatures, and you're always getting attacked as soon as the sun goes down. And Arena and Daggerfall kind of had that same thing. As soon as the sun went down, you had to worry about creatures because it was dark, and that's what that meant. And it sucks that they kind of lost that aspect as the games went on. It was a really cool thing.
Yeah, that is interesting. Falcon, do you have any thoughts on this? Or are you just like, yeah, that's cool?
Yeah, I think the character cycles and their interactions do once again add to that first topic we had. It is all going back to the world feeling real. Having characters stay, it's like, oh, this character is in the bar constantly. It doesn't, I don't know, doesn't seem to work well unless that is, you know, their house, their job.
Right, right. Or like
they're drunk.
Yeah, you're somewhere at like 3 o'clock well, in the morning.
Even like the drunks in like Skyrim, they're gonna wander the town and like beg or whatever. They're gonna they have more than just drinking happening. They're people instead of objects.
I was thinking of the one drunk guy in Winterhold who literally like the bartender just lets him sleep in the inn room for free because he feels bad for him and he's just always there drinking all the time.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think I've got a good sense of how important you guys feel about this one. I want to make sure that we cover some of these other topics too. Let's talk about, we already talked about the combat system. I think we're all on board with a more dynamic and interesting combat system, something that allows you to parry or dodge or manage your different weapons in different ways. Or whatever. When it comes to magic, how important is, obviously magic is a big part of these games. There's different types of magic. Skyrim made advancements where you could say, you know, wield magic in one hand and a weapon in another. But there are certain things about magic that have always been kind of complex. Like it's hard to just constantly go between different spells. You have to open up the favorites menu and change things a lot, right? It's a little unwieldy. Or, for example, all the level one attack element kind of spells are like fire hose, and all the level twos are shoot a projectile, but the projectiles are much harder to hit and they cost a lot more magic, so you kind of just stick with level one for a while. You know, like there's limitations around the magic. How important is the magic system?
Not skilled enough.
If you just keep missing your shots. But how important is the magic system, and what kinds of changes would you want to see, or do you just kind of like what they did with Skyrim? Who wants to chime in on this one? Anybody have thoughts? Spartan, kick us off.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that one of the things I would like with like the open world stuff would be like, I would like certain things to be more challenging if I had more like freedom of ability and freedom of like movement, like a dodge or maybe something. And I think the magic plays pretty big into that. Like I would like to see them really kind of expand it where it's like, I don't have a problem with what it is, how it is in Skyrim. Like, I think it's pretty cool in Skyrim, especially when you get to the higher levels of some of the schools. But I think something that would be really cool is like, because Elder Scrolls games, like you have these big open universes with powerful, you know, entities and magical figures, you know, of all kinds. Give us like a, you know, a super powerful spell school where it's like there's only like three or four types of spells in the school, but you have to be really advanced to know them, like a blood magic or something, or like something more out there where it's like keep the core staples where it's like, yes, you have your basic schools that like are taught in the mage colleges or like that everybody knows, but add in more unique, like, oh, this one particular like Telvanni mage like invented this, and you
or
know,
like the necromancy is one of those like forbidden fields of magic, and you can't just go to the college and learn necromancy. But if you find the necromancer in this one little cave and you convince them with your charisma or whatever, maybe they'll take you under their wing and teach you some of the things they know, right? Like, but that's a big moral dilemma because now you're working for a necromancer, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I like that, and because I just think that plays to also into like how we've all been talking about like how things reward the player and stuff. And it's like if you had wider ranges of different like types of magic you could learn and types of magic you could use, that could be a unique reward. Like you finish like this really challenging quest in this area, and it's like, oh, like you just learned a super awesome spell for this, you know, very unique, you know, spell school. But also that adds to that, like how I was saying earlier, like I want to have more control over what I'm doing, and like I want to be able to dodge, or I want to be able to do this. Like being able to combine more unique types of magic, I think opens up more opportunities for just what the player can do in of like any sort of combat situation or just regular situation. If you have things that can be interactable with the world, like in Skyrim, how you can do like the telekinesis.
Yeah.
Like I think that's cool. Like I like that.
Or and turn yourself invisible in order to sneak easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I like all of, like I would keep all of the core schools that are already there. I would just expand on it in ways where like there are these like legendary or potentially, you know, secret types of magic that you could also learn.
Like sword singing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, then that's the thing. Like in the lore, there are those things that already like,
yeah, I think that shouts kind of worked like that in Skyrim in a way, but they just became your superpower. They weren't treated so much like magic spells as they were just like, here's your superpower and you can use it every so often.
Yeah, I liked shouts too. I think that was cool.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, at like ramp it up some, you know. Who else wants to chime in on this one? Who else has thoughts on Magic? Fulcrum?
So I agree with all of that. Like, I think it really, we keep going back to the, like, how it plays into the world. But, I mean, especially in Elder Scrolls, like, it is, like, it's not about magic, but, like, it's a huge aspect. And, like, you cannot skimp on the magic. And one thing that has always bothered me, and I consider this to be not, it's not a school of magic, but I consider it to be magic because you are a supernatural being at that point. The vampirism.
Mm-hmm.
I think the vampirism is the most useless, and I don't like it. I don't like.
You're talking about specifically the way it works in Skyrim with the like expansion with the turning into the big vampire guy.
Not just turning stuff, into the big fire guy, but like the abilities that they have. Like I feel like they could have done so much more and so much and have done them so much better than so what they did more. Do.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like from what I've seen in the development of Skyrim, the werewolf stuff and the vampire stuff in the base game were kind of tacked on by a few of the developers who were like, I can make this more awesome. I'm just going to work overtime and get it done. And then everyone was like, oh, my God, that's crazy. That's really good. But they weren't given the same sort of like focus as, say, you know, the schools of magic or shouts or something like that.
Yeah, like, I feel like I'm not saying that it's like that it's weak, but it's like, I don't know. It's one of those things where I will never do it because there's no real benefit.
It's not worth your time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to be a vampire, I want it to be worth it. I want it to mean something.
I
want
to feel like a freaking
vampire.
And to
me,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And to me, it doesn't feel like it. And so I know that's negative, but like that just means that the magic is very important, especially because it's Elder Scrolls.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Literally the world is magic.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the themes that I'm detecting as we get through this conversation is that we are all okay with things that feel like they might even break the game. Like game balance is not nearly as important as living the fiction you want to live in a world that feels interesting and reacts to your decisions and feels like an interesting place. Like if you can do the crazy thing and get the super powerful sword, or if you can go down the crazy line of magic by training in some special line of magic, like Spartan's talking about, or get vampirism and all of a sudden you feel overpowered in certain ways, that's fine because it lends to your ability to enjoy an engaging story in a world that responds to your decisions. It doesn't always just have to be balanced. And I feel
right.
like that's
and
a
like,
summary
I feel like,
for what we've kind
I
of
feel
said.
Like,
a really good way to put it.
I feel like there's not enough consequences as well with the vampirism too. You can go out in the middle of the day. It's not like
it's a lot worse in Oblivion when you get vampirism.
Yes.
It's like as it develops, you're just like people start treating you weird. You can't go out in the day because you start taking damage, like all that stuff.
The most
also the
that I noticed
stuff in Oblivion was like it made you feel like you lost something.
Really, you were losing your mind. it felt like. Yeah.
The most that I noticed with it in Skyrim is like if you go to an herbalist, they're like, oh, you look really unwell. Like they don't really like react.
Right.
They're just like, oh, you look sick.
Right. Yeah. Why can't you become like a bane on society and everybody shuns you because you're clearly a vampire, right? Like,
yes. Like I want to feel the consequences. I want to feel the power. I want all of that.
Right.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
I want vampire
like
to be useful.
Having the everyday villager recognize you as a vampire, because that can take away from the rest of the gameplay experience, I feel like.
Well, Oblivion,
there'll be some consequence.
In Oblivion,
you going in there and using your abilities should and like in a town using your abilities, they should be like, oh my god, you're a vampire.
Oh yeah, if you're terrorizing the town, the town with your vampire powers.
And in Oblivion, just to kind of throw this out there, if you allow it to progress past a certain point, people really start to notice. But then you can just go feed on somebody and then it reduces it and people don't notice as much anymore. So like, you could have ways of managing it, but it's one of those things where, like, if you haven't been managing it or you're just not paying attention to it in the moment, all of a sudden you walk in the middle of town, everyone's like, oh dear god, and you're like, oh, I forgot. Oops. Yeah. now there's ramifications.
That's like you just said, oh, I forgot, like that. It that means like that magic to me, that magic is not meaningful at all.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's an interesting way to see that. All right, we've got to, I feel like magic is important. And again, you're good. I think we're hitting together. This is like a conversation that we're all in. And I think we're getting to the core of some. And that was my point of pitching this as a topic for this week, is getting to the root of what makes an Elder Scrolls game feel like an Elder Scrolls game. What really does that? Because I'm sure it's something that they debate internally in the development team, and I'm sure there's a lot of pressure to do a lot of things in ways that other games do or whatever, or to continue things in a certain trajectory. But I think that to the benefit of the core fan base, there are certain things that just mean a lot to each of us. And like we discussed before, some of those things are the things that give us more control over our own stories, whether they're balanced or not. And I think that's probably important. Now, last topic that we're going to cover here is crafting and building and all of the combination of that, like the making of potions, maybe even managing your magic, you know, creating your own types of magic or whatever, but definitely crafting your weapons and your armor, or being able to build a home or construct a home, or take some of the things they've added to some of the Fallout games and work that stuff in. How do you all feel about that side of the games?
This one I kind of want to jump in on because it ties into the last one. Mm-hmm. Is like, yeah, magic and stuff like that and the combat, these kind of all like relate to each other and they have like obviously an impactful feel. I feel like one of the things is I think crafting is a huge benefit to the series, especially because I think they've kind of too much with the streamlining on magic, and I feel like they need to bring back spellcrafting. Like that's a thing that I feel is lacking in Skyrim, like notably how restrictive the magic has been streamlined down, I think is a detriment. But the other thing is sort of with Starfield is like, I feel like where it kind of got crafting became, hey, you can craft just to say you can craft, like here are outposts, but they don't really have a purpose because you already have so much money, it doesn't matter. So you can craft these things. Crafting, I think, is super useful when it has a purpose. Spellcrafting has a purpose. Crafting armor and being able to upgrade it has a purpose.
Right.
Yeah. Being able to build settlements from Fallout 4, I thought, had a purpose. Your homestead has a purpose. But it started to become so elaborate in a way almost just to let you do it, which I do appreciate. But I wish they would start kind of like keep maybe what they have with these like settlement style things and outposts and whatever. I mean, you don't have a ship in Elder Scrolls 6, I wouldn't assume, but
well, I mean, there has been talk about
whatever.
There has been talk about if it is going to be around Iliac Bay, that maybe they're actually
like
going to be
a literal boat.
You actually have a ship, and then you can build a ship and travel.
These things are great, but let them be more than just crafting it for the sake of crafting it. Like I think expanding the crafting is great, but let it have a purpose other than, hey, it can make you more money. I have more money than God. Like, I don't need more money. Like, let me do something with it.
Right. It's more fun to get money by going on a quest and finding a cool treasure in a cave somewhere than it is to build 100 daggers and sell them.
I kind of counterpoint your point, Lotus. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I hate crafting in most games.
Okay.
It's just more work when I'm here to have fun, not
Like filler.
I don't play video games to do menial tasks. And I feel like that is what that feels like a lot of the times. However, if it gives you the option where like, oh yeah, if you want better armor, you can have a really good like blacksmithing skill or whatever, and then you'll have a better defense stat because of that, or your sword will do more damage if you sharpen it as a pro blacksmith. I like that. And then if I don't want to do that, I still have a good sword. I still have a good suit of armor.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And so like, as long as it's not so contingent that you need to craft, then I'm on board. And then if there is something that, like, say they put boats in the next game and we have to make a boat, well, if there's also a way to just get a lot of money and buy a boat instead, that would be really super nice, because I don't want to have to spend all that time making a damn boat.
I totally agree with that. There should always be like a stock option that the game works totally fine. But like, it's one of those things, if you want to get involved with it, it can benefit you. That's great. But it's like, yeah, here's your boat to get around the Aleutic Bay. It looks like, you know, it's a cardboard box with a sail strapped to the top. That's fine, because it can still get you around.
The other piece of this that would make it even more interesting is people, if you take the time to build your own boat and customize it, people notice it. And people treat you differently.
Right? The interaction
if this ties into all the other stuff that we talked about, this world reacting to your decisions, and you pull up on a new port and you've got this badass looking boat and you get off and people are like, whoa, who are you? How did you get that? Like, you must be wealthy. You have an amazing ship or whatever. Then that plays in, like, even though that isn't a like mechanic that makes you do more damage against enemies or things like that, it makes the world feel more cool and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And real.
I hate crafting, but I love accessorizing. So now I'm on board.
See, there you go.
But the same sort of thing. Like, exactly. what if crafting was expanded in a way where not only were you building swords and armor and things like that, but you could also build specific types of clothing, or maybe you could polish up your armor or upgrade your armor in a way that puts, like, I don't know, in blazing, like,
changes the look of it.
You take the silver, the gold you found in the cave, and now you melt that down, and now you've got silver etching on your armor, and people are like, wow, look at you, you're fancy. Like, all of a sudden the world is now reacting to you again.
You know, you're like in RuneScape and you got that gold trim armor.
I guess so. Is that a RuneScape thing? But I feel like that's part of it. That kind of plays into it as well. Let's Spartan or Falcon, either of you guys want to chime in on the crafting side of things?
Yeah, I agree with Rob in the sense of, like, I feel like crafting and like base building is a really easy thing to slip into that territory of, like, it feels like a chore.
Yes, I agree. I'm on board with that.
And I don't like it when it does that. And I think it's very easy for that to happen. I think like Bethesda does a good job not having that happen, but I just mean like in general. But I think, as like everyone was just talking there, with like the ships and maybe people recognize your ship, something that I think would actually be really cool that kind of continues the theme of like playing into the open world and the feel of things would be, I think a way that'd be really fun to expand crafting would be like, if you have like a super high blacksmith skill or you've demonstrated like a proficiency in some way, to have crafting related quests. And I don't mean like writs like in ESO. I mean, like, you are known as this legendary blacksmith. So somebody tells you, like, hey, there's this forge at this location. Mm-hmm. You know, you can fight your way there and you can make this, you know, hammer that you can only make at that spot. But we know that you have the capacity to make it, so we're going to give you this information.
Right. Or you're trying to get an audience with the king, and because you're a nobody, they won't see you. But if you're a master craftsman, then maybe they will see you. And now you've got a quest to create a special item to give to the king in order to get audience with the king, which opens up another quest. You know, like, yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah, that's a cool idea. Falcon.
Pull up in your blinged out ship.
Yeah, if you pull up in your blinged out ship with your blinged out armor, with your shiny sword, Daedric swords, and everyone's like, oh, dear God. Falcon, what were you thinking?
I think crafting, building, accessorizing, I think that is, to me and how I play, more important to be improved upon than combat. I'd be more upset if the crafting in Elder Scrolls 6 is like Skyrim than if the combat is like Skyrim. Simply, I don't do much combat in these games. That's not what I plan for. If I want to do combat, I'll play Elden Ring.
But you prefer the crafting side of it. Like, you would rather spend more time doing that.
I like the crafting. I like the talking. I like the interacting more. The interacting with people instead of fighting people, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
He likes the Farmville side of it more.
Pretty much.
But that's what's cool about these games, is you kind of can approach them in different ways, or you can do multiple playthroughs and focus more on one thing than another. And I think if they continue to flesh that out in ways that is satisfying, then that will be a success, right? I think, again, if they want to if they want to mirror the success that was Skyrim, then there are certain, some of these things that we've been talking about absolutely need to be a part of the next game. Or it'll be the sort of thing where we all play through it once and then we just don't play through it anymore. And like, I personally want an Elder Scrolls 6 that I go back to every year and I go, oh, I want to do another playthrough. I want to try doing this because I never did this before. Or, you know, and we've talked about locking out quests and things like that. And there are definitely some things that we haven't discussed, some of the character stuff, story. We could get into more detail with the combat, but we're running out of time. So maybe we should shelve those for a future episode, kind of come back around to that stuff. I think that'll be the plan. Thank you for joining me, everybody. This has been super fun to get into the details of how we've enjoyed these games and what things are important. Let's go back through everyone and feel free to throw out whatever you want into the world, share whatever you want with everyone. And other than that, thank you for being here. Rob, let's start with you. I'm just going to go down the list of everyone on my screen. Anything you want to share? Hi, Rob.
I'm Rob the Princess. You can follow me online. I'm in the Discord as well as always. I am still legally a guild officer for the PCNA guild. I'm playing a little bit here and there because Jillian's guild tripped me, so you might see me online occasionally.
Gold Road's coming out soon.
Yeah, probably won't play it.
At least not right away. You'll probably play it at some point.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe won't one day.
We'll see.
But yeah, that's me. Skyblivion Project. Woo. That's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. Fulcrum, you got anything you want to share?
Tomorrow's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
I started school on Monday again.
Okay. Well,
that's really all I got going on.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
I'm in the Discord. I play WoW. Sometimes I'll probably jump back into ESO eventually when I'm not playing well with my husband.
Yeah, changing things up every so often. Yep, I get it. Well, thanks for joining us. Spartan, anything you want to share?
Yeah. I am one of the hosts of the Elden Archives, which is the From Software Lorecast from the Rocket Club with the network. Those episodes come out every week on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the usual platforms and all that. And with that, obviously, we're like 3 weeks away now from the DLC, which I'm like flirting with the idea of just like uninstalling social media from my phone. Like, because I just as we were recording, apparently there was some big like Destiny leak and Elden Ring stuff was involved in that. So it's like, it's already starting. On that front, which is exciting, but I also like, I don't want to be spoiled by anything.
Sure.
Because I'm very excited for that. And also I'm just kind of excited for how it's going to feel, because this is the first time I've had to play new content after becoming the host. So I feel like I have a different lens now.
It does. Like, it changes things. Yeah.
Like, and I haven't had that experience yet. So I'm excited for that too.
Yeah. Every time there's a new update for ESO or any of the other shows I do, there's new content that comes out. I have to debate like, how much do I cover? How soon? What is too spoilery for the audience? What isn't? It changes things up. Yeah, it definitely. And what do I know about this now that I'm not going to get wrong in a month from now and be like, ah, crap, I misinterpreted that playthrough because there's more information that's come out, you know? So, yeah, it is a thing. But go check out the Elden Archives if you're playing Elden Ring. And I'm excited about the expansion as well, the DLC that's coming out. So it sounds like it's going to be awesome. And then we've got Falcon. Falcon, anything you want to share? Nope.
Not much. Just I'm in the Discord. I talk in that pretty often. And then I'm playing through the Half-Life game, so that's kind of all I've been doing.
Nice. Classic.
Blue Force. Well, one of the spinoffs between 1 and 2.
Yeah, where you play as like the cops, right? The the security team. Yeah, man, those are classics.
Yeah, they're good.
RIP Half-Life 3.
Yeah.
I'd just be happy with Episode 3.
Right. Yeah, right.
Just more, please.
Yeah.
Anything.
That would be nice. Well, thanks for joining us, Falcon. And then Lotus. Yeah, man. Anything you want to share, Lotus?
No, we'll probably be recording a new episode of Tales somewhat in the near future. We're just kind of compiling news. But since things are a little slow because the
expansion is about to come out. The chapter releases incredibly soon. It's mostly been PTS. We've kind of like had our updates and then we're waiting to have enough to have a full show worth of stuff. But since it's going to be dropping very soon, like, we'll probably be having another episode of Tales of Tamriel maybe about a week or so. But other than that, I've just been playing some ESO. As I, you know, I guess I'll do a shout out for, speaking of guilds, the PlayStation side of things. We've had quite a few more people join over there. If you play on PlayStation NA ESO and are interested in a guild, you're more than welcome to apply and jump in with us. We've got our guild hall. I've almost got it finished with every crafting station available, and the hall itself is nearly done. So yeah, if that's a platform you play on, feel free to just request an invite. We really just use it to filter out douchebags, and that's about it.
right.
But people are just friendly, and it's mostly social, just chatting and stuff like that. Nothing super organized, and no real requirements of anything other than just if it's something you might be interested in.
Yeah, go check it out.
That,
also,
that reminds me. I'm sorry, Rob, to butt in.
Yeah.
I wanted to shout out to the PCNA Guild because Jillian, the guild officer who's actually still doing stuff, has totally souped up our guild base. We have like every resource that a guild
needs. I saw that. You guys just finished your full crafting station.
Yeah, we have every crafting station possible. Yep. We have all of that. Shout out to Jillian. If you guys want to join PCNA, I know I'm not as active in there, but they are still popping off. Go have fun. See all the hard work that Jillian's done. So
Yeah. She's been doing events on like Friday nights.
Deserving a shout out.
With people hanging out and taking on dungeons or whatever. Yeah, lots of stuff going on. So jump on the Discord if you're interested in any of that stuff. Also, the dev team for ESO did an AMA on Reddit.
That's true.
What was that, like yesterday? So they answered. I scrolled through some of it. I got some of the questions, but you know, a lot of the standard stuff where, you know, like, hey, when are you gonna fix this part of the game? You know, a lot of those. But also,
yeah,
you know,
that sounds like an ESO AMA.
Yeah. But also, you know, like, hey, I'm really excited about this. Can't wait to learn more about that. And, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's worth checking out if you want to go check that out as well. But yeah, we're getting a expansion very soon, and I'm excited to jump into it and play through the prologue quest recently in ESO.
Yeah, it's really good.
You all have done that, but yeah, it's great.
It's surprisingly involved too.
Yeah, it takes you to like three different really interesting locations that have to do with different Daedric princes, and you've got the big like shrines to them with like I love when you get to interesting art. And
it's a pretty full prologue quest.
Yeah. If it's any I guess any reference for what we're going to get in the actual full thing, if the rest of it is similar in scale with the way the quests work, and I don't know, some of the story bits, like I'm really interested to know, like, how does this play in with these other Daedric princes specifically? Because we knew about Hermaeus Mora, but like there's a lot of cool stuff. Go play through it, and then we'll talk about Gold Coast, you know, a little bit later after people have time to dig into that. But Lotus and I will be back next week. We're going to finish up getting through the main quest line for Daggerfall, or at least maybe we got one or more, two more
episodes. We'll give it a shot.
There's
so many quests and they all interloop.
Yeah. We'll give it a shot to get through it. We'll do the best we can. And then we'll be on to other stuff. So have a wonderful week, everybody. And we will see you next time. Stay safe out there. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.